Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Network Sunday, April 7th, 2019. This is episode 1581. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Carbonite, the premier data protection platform for business with customizable cloud and hybrid backup for your servers. To learn more, visit carbonite.com. And by DigitalOcean. Deploy your apps on the simplest cloud platform with no surprises. Join a community of over 3.5 million developers on DigitalOcean. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. And by WordPress. Turn your dreams into reality and launch your website at wordpress.com. Get 15% off any new plan at wordpress.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? It's Leo Laporte, the tech guy, talking high tech. Yeah, this is the show where we talk about computers and the internet, mostly about smartphones and smartwatches and augmented reality and GPS and rocket ships and malware and, you know, all that stuff. This is the place to talk about it if you want to call in with a question. You know, I've recently realized that really what I do here is computer counseling, therapy. Because, you know, you could probably Google the answer to your question, but I'm a sympathetic voice here to provide you with some calming wisdom in this troubling time. The answers go to the website, of course, they go out to you on the radio, but then afterwards we put the show, audio and video up on the website and answers to the questions so you can find anything. You don't have to write anything down. That website is techguylabs.com, and that's free, no sign up. TechGuyLabs.com. This was a sad week in Google land. A sad week. Google Plus died on, was it Tuesday, April 2nd? Yeah. Also, inbox from Gmail. Do you use that? That's gone. earlier, goo.gl, their URL shortener, went away. Chromecast audio was discontinued last month. YouTube annotations removed January 15th. Google Fiber gave up the ghost. In fact, actually left town on February 8th. Google's tablet and laptop division was slashed on March 12th. In fact, if you looked at this litany of things, there's a whole website devoted to it. It's kind of a fun website, killedbygoogle.com. All the... All the things, 158 of them that Google brought to us said, shiny new thing, try it, yay. We tried it and then they killed it. Sometimes quickly, sometimes not so quickly. I'm really sad about Google Plus. I know nobody used it. And maybe that's why it was so good in the early days. Social network, it was a social network. Social networks are often good when nobody's there. Then people start using it and it turns into Twitter or Facebook or something. But anyway, Google Plus was created, what, about 7 years ago by Google because they were freaked out by Facebook. They thought Facebook was going to eat their lunch and that search, as Google knows it, was not going to be the future. The future was going to be social search, the knowledge graph. And so they created Google Plus. And in fact, it was in a way because people put stuff there. You could search for that. You could search for people by name and find lots of good content. It was a really neat place. It had tools that Twitter still to this day lacks. The ability to edit posts, for instance. The ability to block people you didn't want to be leaving comments. The fact that it had threaded comments means every post could have a conversation associated with it. You didn't have to search through a whole stack of stuff. It was right there. Remember the plus one where you could upvote stuff? It was actually cool. And it's a real tragedy for photographers. I know so many photographers. I was talking to Ant Pruitt this week. He's a great photographer. My good friend Trey Ratcliffe. They saw Google Plus as the best place to put photos because, you know, socially. Facebook squeezes the photos down and nothing. They don't look good. Twitter, a photo, it goes by in this Twitter stream of trash and zip, it's gone. But Google Plus, they looked big. They were nice. I wasn't talking to you, Google, sorry. Did you hear that? It was great. And frankly, after a while, a lot of people were using it. It was it was everything a social network should be. And that's why Google killed it, I guess. I don't know why Google killed it. It was Google killed it. Not the fact that they shut down on Tuesday isn't when they killed it. They killed it a couple of 3 years ago when they neglected it. It was killed by neglected. And one thing we know about social networks, they're like a garden. If you don't continually weed them and prune them and care for them, water them and feed them, social networks will get weedy. And pretty soon the weeds push out the flowers and all you got is a patch of weeds, right? That's what happens in a garden if you ignore it. You just get an overgrown patch of weeds. In a social network, if you don't weed out the trolls and the evil people, the Nazis and the just the bitter, vicious, ugly stuff, it takes over because normal people say, I'm not sticking around here. In fact, there's really a movement, of which I'm a happy member, by the way, since August, to kill your Facebook and Twitter and Instagram accounts because of these weeds. Anyway, I'm sad about Google Plus, but that's done deal. That was a done deal years ago because spam immediately started taking over once Google neglected it. This has to hurt Google. You know, this a couple weeks ago they announced a new gaming initiative, Stadia, and asked developers, please write games for Stadia. You have to think that developers said, no, are you kidding? You're just going to kill it in 2 years. I'm not putting any effort into that. My wife, a normal person, she's a little geeky because she lives with me, but she's pretty normal. On hearing about Stadia, she said, no, I'm not going to try it because Google just kills stuff. This is the reputation Google's getting. It's probably too late. No, Google just kills stuff. Add that to Google's privacy issues. This is disappointing. Here's a company that by all rights should be, I mean, people, I still like them. People like Google, right? People hate Facebook. They hate Twitter, but they like Google. And for reasons I don't fully understand. But that's changing. That's changing. I stopped using Gmail because I don't want Google to have access to, you know, a decade worth of information about me. It seemed like a bad idea. Google, I think we'll look back and we'll say Google fumbled the future. Google had a real opportunity. And instead, and why, I guess, is the question. And the experts, people who follow Google, say, well, the real problem is Google likes shiny new things. This is pretty apparent, actually, if you think about it. They love the new stuff. And it's easy to get programmers, and Google really is just a bunch of engineers, right? Thinly held together with chewing gum. These engineers love the new stuff. Oh, we're going to create something really cool and new. And the minute it's launched, it's like, well, that's boring. What else? Squirrel. What else can we look at? They have no attention span. That's what we're seeing. And frankly, if people are going to invest time and energy into using Google services, they have to feel like the energy is going to be well spent, that there's going to be some benefit, continuing ongoing benefit. You're not just going to pull the plug. And then you add that, the drumbeat from Washington that Google needs to be broken up, that Google's gotten too big, that Google's invading our privacy. This is very disappointing. This is a company that had a ton of goodwill and just squandered it. Squandered it. I don't have Google stock. I don't have a dog in this hunt. I don't have stock in any tech company. That's kind of, you know, a pledge I made to myself so that I wouldn't be influenced by any financial arrangement with anything. But, I mean, it might be in my 401k. I don't really look at that. But it's not Google. It would be some mutual fund. I hope, though, that they get rid of the Google stock. I don't know. You know what? This could go on for a long time. Google ain't going anywhere. I am not either. I'm going to take your calls. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take some calls right after this. And we're going to go right to the phones. Thanks to Kim Schaffer, our phone angel. We've got Roland on the line from Hutchinson, Kansas. Hi, Roland.
Hey, Leo. I have a couple of quick questions. You touched on this a little while back about the app, the Amazon Recast. I'm kind of, I thought I was going to buy one, but I'm looking around, and I guess there are a few other options. I'm trying to figure out which one is better as far as like the Air TV, etc.
So tell me what you're trying to accomplish, I guess, would be the first thing.
Well, I'm trying to accomplish recording regular TV shows as far as CBS, ABC, Fox, because I don't have cable anymore. But I'd like to
You want an over-the-air DVR, basically.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. So I actually I'm not familiar with the Recast. That does look kind of interesting. This is a relatively new product from Amazon.
Right.
It's a box you have in your house. It's got a hard drive in it. It has two tuners, which is pretty sweet. So you'll have an antenna. Obviously, you have an OTA, over-the-air antenna out there. And I mentioned TVFool.com and AntennaWeb.com is two sites where you, or .org, I guess, for AntennaWeb, where you can get information about what channels are available at your particular location and then what antenna would work best for that. That helps to tune the antenna, get it pointed in the right direction. And then the Recast, will be in between the antenna and your TV. It looks like you also have to have a Fire TV or an Echo Show to use that. That way you can talk to it, which is kind of cool. So you could say something like, hey, Recast, don't forget to record today's Super Bowl game. Stuff like that. That's pretty awesome.
You can also watch it over your phone as well.
Oh, that's really neat. So that, I haven't tried. I'm going to have to get one of these and give you a review. I don't have experience with it. The two that I know of that a lot of people recommend, but maybe these things aren't as good anymore, now that Amazon's in the business, is Channel Master. That's at channelmaster.com. They're, TiVo also makes, by the way, an over-the-air TiVo. That's the king of the hill. But, man, is TiVo expensive. Not only do you have to pay for the box, but you have to pay for the TV guide, a monthly fee. Channel Master does not charge a monthly fee for the TV guide. So Channel Master is another one to look at. They also sell antennas and other things. And then HD Home Run from Silicon Dust is very popular with a lot of our listeners. It's kind of I wouldn't be surprised, frankly, if Amazon's Recast is based on this, because it is does streaming through the house, kind of even looks the same. It's a similar capability. So I would look at that. It's silicondust.com. But I think they all do roughly the same thing. Let me ask the chat room. Does anybody have experience with any of these? Channel Master, TiVo, Silicon Dust's HD Home Run, or Fire TV Recast for over-the-air DVRs?
I also notice that the Recast, you can upgrade one that actually has four tuners in it, I believe.
Wow. And it's so the two-tuner version is $229.99, which is a pretty good price. This sounds like I'm not familiar with this. It's the first I've heard of it. Maybe somebody else on our network did. This looks like a really cool product. Does anybody have any experience with? We have a lot of people with the HD Home Run, the Silicon Dust product, but I think this Firecast is so new. Recast, I should say, the Fire TV Recast is so new. I don't know if anybody has experience with it. I will download it, or rather buy it and try it and let you know.
Okay.
Looks like pretty positive reviews, and of course that's always the best thing to do on Amazon. There are some negative reviews. I would read the reviews and make sure it'll do what you want it to do. That seems like usability might be an issue with some of these reviews. So, but hey, I love the functionality they're talking about. That looks pretty cool. Recast. Okay. Thank you for telling me about
that. Quick question.
Yeah.
Another quick question. The mounts that we're putting in our cars, like the magnetic mounts, I've got an XS Max, and I know that I do the wireless charging. If I put one of those little metal pieces of steel,
it'll block the charger. Yeah, it'll block it.
Okay, so that's not a good idea.
Yeah, that's how these magnetic mounts require you to put a piece of magnetic material on the back of the phone, and that's exactly what'll block the wireless charging. What I would do is put it on a case.
Phone sideways.
Yeah, or put it on a sometimes if you can there's a particular place where the wireless charging coil is. If you can put the metal, if the metal circle is small enough to put it at a different spot, yeah, that'll be okay. The other thing you'd do is put it on a case. I would put it on a case. And that way you take the case off to charge.
Okay, well, I have my phone in a life-proof case. I can't.
Oh, you can't
really
do
it. Just replace $1,000 phone every time it drives.
You can't charge through the life-proof case either, can you? The life-proof case.
Yes.
Oh, that's good.
The mono price wireless chargers and
good.
Works every night.
Good. So it's plastic and it's thin enough that it can get the back of the phone close enough. So there's two things that affect wireless charging. Of course, any metal is going to block it, but also it has to be within a few millimeters of the actual charging coil. And if a case is too thick, you won't be able to charge either. Obviously, that life-proof case, despite being super rugged, is thin enough that you can still charge. I always look for cases I can wireless charge. I don't want to ever lose that capability. I think that's pretty important. So, yeah, I think if you – I can't remember. As I remember, the discs are fairly small. You know, maybe they're the size of a silver dollar. So if you put that down, you got to figure out where the coil is. Usually the coil is higher up right below the camera on a wireless phone, wireless charging phone. So if you put the disc at the other end, that should be fine.
Okay. Right. That's what I was wondering. Okay, well, thank you very much, Leo.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. Yeah. Yeah, wireless charging is suddenly everywhere, thanks to Apple finally getting on the ball. This new Samsung Galaxy S10 I got, it does one even weirder thing. It will wirelessly charge other stuff. So I can put the wireless earbuds on the back of the Samsung phone. The charging has to be turned on, the back of the phone. They call it, Apple's going to do this apparently in 2019. What do they call it? There's a funny name for it. Wireless power sharing. So you turn on power sharing, and then you can put there you go. And you put the headphones in the back of the phone, it'll charge the headphones. Or another phone, or any Qi-compatible charging device. So in this case, on the Samsung Galaxy S10, I could see where the coil is because I can move the phone, the headphones around until it starts to light up. And it's right in the middle of the phone. That might make it a little bit hard to put a magnetic mount on an S10. But on other phones I've seen, it's a little higher up. So that's the only experimentation you have to do. Don't glue that thing down until you figure out exactly where it is. Apple apparently is going to do the same kind of power sharing. There's no reason not to, except that you have to have a big enough battery in the first place that you can afford to share. I don't want anybody to know I have that capability because I'm afraid they'll come up and say, hey, can I borrow some power? No, I have barely enough as it is. I'm not giving you my power. Don't ask me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All the answers to all the questions at our website, techguylabs.com. No sign up. It's free. And it's open all week long. More of your calls after this. Oh, I love that song. It's time for the car guy. Sam Abulsamid is here. He is our car guy, a senior researcher at Navigant Research, and takes me for a ride every week on this station. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Leo.
We've been talking for the last few weeks about electric vehicles, and you know, there's a new one in town. The folks at Tesla announced, and I think this is a little funny, but we saw it coming. They had a Model S. Mm-hmm. They had a Model X. Mm-hmm. That's what I have. And they have a Model 3, but the way they do the 3, it's sideways. It looks like an E, so they have an S-E-X. What's next?
Why?
Why not? So this is the newest Tesla, the Model Y. Elon had an event last week to show it off. What did he say? What do we know about it? When is it available?
It'll be available. The current plan is it'll be available in
2020.
So about 18 months from now.
And
based on Tesla's ability to meet schedules, that should mean somewhere around 2022 maybe.
They did it with their earlier vehicles. You put down a $1,000 deposit and you get in line. Mm-hmm. And you wait. And sometimes people wait 2 years or more for their Tesla. But there's that demand. There really is.
Yeah. This time it's actually $2,500 because
why not?
The bank account's getting a little low and they need to replenish it with you know,
the Model 3. They had something like 100,000 pre-orders.
It was
for it, right?
Over 400,000.
400,000.
Yeah. But a lot of those have apparently been canceled.
Because the law says that they don't get to keep that money if you don't take the car.
Right. Yeah. So they're fully refundable deposits.
Right.
And so that it's the same case this time. You know, it's a $2,500 deposit to get.
Do
in
we
line.
Know what response that he got for the Y?
No, they haven't said anything. And frankly, you know, based on what we saw happen over the past year with the Model 3, I would say, you know, if you want a Y, go ahead and get one, but don't bother putting a deposit down now because it doesn't guarantee your place in line at all.
That's the other thing. Something weird. They build the most expensive ones first.
Well, that's actually pretty common in the auto industry. Yeah, and they typically, but it's usually for a couple of months. You know, like the first month or two of production, they will focus on getting the higher trim levels out,
right,
and getting those into the marketplace. You know, the people that are most anxious to get it, you know, they're going to spend more on it.
That's what I got a P90D because I wanted it sooner.
So about, you know, usually overbought. Within about 2 to 3 months, they start rolling out the base models.
Right.
In the case of the Model 3, it was more like almost 2 years.
Where does the Y fit in this lineup?
So the Y is basically a slightly taller hatchback version of the Model 3. It shares about 3/4 of its parts, so they say, with the Model 3, which means it should be, you know, a lot easier for them to engineer. I mean, they're basically taking the motor and the battery pack and the electronics and most of the interior straight off the 3.
So why is it going to take so long to make it?
Probably because they have to tool up for
its capacity.
Not so much capacity.
They just have to build a line.
Yeah, they have to put in the equipment to do it, and that's going to cost money.
In Fremont, California, they bought the big NUMMI plant, which is where Saturn, GM Saturn made its vehicles.
Actually, it was Toyota and GM was a joint venture.
That's right,
there,
the NUMMI.
Saturn was built in Tennessee.
Oh, I'm sorry, not Saturn. Yeah, it's what vehicles did they build?
When they started off, they were building. They built a version of the Corolla that they called the Chevy Nova, and then eventually they had the Geo Prism.
The Prism.
Yeah,
that's right.
So they had the Geo lineup for a while.
So that plant has a huge capacity and is not used to max by any means by Tesla. In fact, a lot of it's just empty at this point.
Apparently that plant is pretty full now because
of the 3.
Yeah, well, the 3 and the S and the X are built there. Plus, Tesla also builds a lot of parts that other manufacturers usually outsource, things like seats. Tesla builds their own seats instead of buying them from one of the other established seat providers. So they've got lines to build all that stuff in there. So they're using up a lot of the space in there. So at the last earnings call, Elon talked about it'll probably be built at the Gigafactory. So they'll have to put in an assembly line and a body shop there.
They're not going to build it in Fremont. They're going to build it in Nevada.
Probably not. Depends on how well Model 3 and S and X demand holds up between now and then.
3 is the best-selling electric vehicle in America, right?
It was in the second half of 2018, yes.
Even outsells a lot of gas?
It's been outselling a lot of the gas-engined comparable premium sedans.
So it's a success.
It has been a success. Whether it can sustain that success is another question.
Sam and I are on opposite poles about our bullishness on Tesla. I own a Tesla and I love my Tesla, but you always have been a little suspicious of it.
Well, it's just that the company has not been particularly well run. The cars are actually, in a lot of ways, very good. They've done a lot of very interesting engineering things.
And I want to give Elon credit because he's
single-handedly the electric vehicle.
Yeah, he's kickstarted this industry. And for our environment, if nothing else, this is probably a good
thing.
Yeah. Although I've heard people say, maybe it's just people don't like electric vehicles, that they aren't as environmentally friendly as one would hope.
It all depends on where you live. If you live somewhere, if you're getting a lot of your electricity from renewables, from wind and solar, then it's really great.
How about the making of the batteries?
There's certainly a lot of energy that goes into manufacturing the batteries, but there's a lot of energy that goes into manufacturing engines and other parts as well.
And it does get us off.
But they do have to mine a lot of materials that wouldn't otherwise use.
Yeah, lithium-ion batteries are not a nice thing.
And a lot of cobalt that mostly comes from Africa. And
suspect mining.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, I think the emissions are, much improved by that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the direct emissions from the vehicle itself, there aren't any.
They're zero. Yeah.
So, it basically all comes down to, where the electricity comes from and where the other raw materials.
Even if you're getting your electricity from a coal-burning plant, because it's centralized like that, those probably can be cleaner than a bunch of cars.
There is certainly the potential for them to be cleaner as long as we make sure that the power generating companies, use proper emission controls and things.
So the Y is out in a year and a half. Nothing to get all excited about.
The long-range Y will be out towards the end of next year, and then sometime in the spring of the following year, they promise the standard range version.
Yeah. You're going to run out and get one?
Probably not.
You drive a Miata.
I do. See, I see myself as being, you know, the most environmentally responsible because I work from home, so I don't have to commute.
You don't drive at all.
And, you know, and rather than having a vehicle that has to expend resources to build a new vehicle all the time, I am continuing to use a 29-year-old car.
That's actually a really good point. A lot of the environmental impact of cars is personal ownership,
mm-hmm.
and making vehicles and training them in, and
it's estimated that a third to a quarter to a third of all the emissions and fuel that's used by cars is actually just used driving around trying to find a place to park.
That I believe,
yeah,
especially if you live in the San Francisco Bay Area as I do.
So if you don't have to do that, you know, you're good.
No parking. Will Tesla continue its route towards autonomous self-driving cars?
They're certainly going to try.
They've made some pretty bold claims.
Yes. I think in some respects, somewhat irresponsible claims.
Yeah.
Until they can actually... You know, particularly on the products that they're delivering today, you know, they, Elon on his last interview on 60 Minutes, you know, he was riding along in the car with his hands off the steering wheel, even though the owner's manual for that car explicitly says, keep your hands on the steering wheel.
And it'll bug you.
Yeah.
It'll bug you until you do.
All these cars do, yeah.
And they've changed the software on my Model X that if I go, more than a few minutes without my hands on the wheel, it scolds you and says, that's it for you. No more self-driving vehicle for you.
Yeah.
It's a little bit insulting.
It can be, yeah.
But safety first. And, you know, I never treated the autopilot in my Tesla as an autopilot.
The system is not reliable and robust enough yet.
It's
for you to count on it.
It's adaptive cruise control.
Yeah, it's a very good driver assist system.
But it's not autopilot.
And you should treat it as that.
Yeah.
You know, don't listen to people like Greg Wester on Twitter.
Don't get in the back seat and sleep. Yeah. No, that's nuts.
Yeah.
No, I have my hands on the wheel and I keep an eye on what's going on. Sam Abulsamid, senior researcher at Navigant Researcher. He's our car guy. Joins us every week. Always great to talk to you, Sam. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up right after this. Back to the phones we go. Benny in Pasadena, California. Hey, Benny.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I am great. How are you?
Hanging in there.
Oh, all right.
You actually answered this question for me, but I haven't taken any action yet. So
I'll answer it again. It'll save me having to come up with a new answer.
Well, I still need a printer.
Okay.
And I know Epson's a sponsor, so
I'm a little biased. What are you going to do with this printer?
Well, these are the basic stuff: print.
Do you need color?
Scan.
Are you going to do photo printing or just color printing or black and white? Does it matter?
Color printing would be nice.
Okay. And is now
maybe even a fax.
Oh, now we're getting fancy. All right, so that means you probably want an all-in-one. If you're going to have a fax, you want to have a scanner, too, because you want to send faxes. You'll scan pieces of paper with a scanner, and then you can send them out. So that's what we call an all-in-one. It prints, it scans, it faxes. And sometimes they're abbreviated AIOs, all-in-ones. Every manufacturer, of course, makes these. If you want color, then there are color laser printers, but the color's pretty washed out, especially if you're going to do photo printing. That means an inkjet. Inkjets do a very nice job of color. Some inkjets are better at photo printing than others. If you do want to make photo prints, you want to look for one that says, you know, photo printing. And, of course, you have to buy special paper. And it can get pretty expensive. On the other hand, it's really convenient to be able to make prints right in your own house. How often are you going to print?
Yeah. Maybe, I don't know, like twice a week. And second thought, the fax is not that important. I can go to a store to do that.
Yeah, if you don't fax a lot, I wouldn't get the fax. Because it's going to require a dedicated phone line, or you're going to have to plug it into the phone and unplug it. And when it's faxing, you're going to have to say, don't use the phone, I'm sending a fax! It's the kind of thing I used to do in the 70s. I'm on the internet, Mom! Don't pick up! Oh, Mom! I used to play on CompuServe, which was before the internet, we had these online bulletin board systems. I used to play this adventure game But if Mom picked up the phone while I was on the adventure game, I'd lose my place, and I'd have to, Mom, I have to start over now. Come on, Mom. I want to use the phone, honey. So let's not send faxes. How about that?
All right, no fax.
Let's come in the 21st century. I would still say Epson. So there's two choices here. Inkjet for sure if you want color. If you want the cheapest possible printer, you will get a standard cartridge inkjet printer. The problem is, and you know, people know this, but I don't know. The printers, which can be like less than $100, they're losing money on those. What they're making money on is the cartridges. And often the cartridges are so expensive, I've seen people say, oh, I'm just going to buy a new printer. I don't want to spend the money on the cartridges.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's cartridge printing. The other problem with cartridges is you have to keep them in stock because they run out at the most inopportune times. Now, it does have the advantage of the lowest upfront cost. These Epson printers are these so-called eco tanks. They cost more upfront because they come with a lot of ink. No cartridges. Okay. They're just big tanks. And so you fill them up, and they usually last around between 8,000 and 11,000 pages, which means probably, let's see, you're doing a few pages a week. It's going to last you a long time. A long time.
Yeah.
Now, one thing to be aware of with inkjet printing is if you don't print much, like if you leave them for a month or two, you're going to use up some ink getting the nozzles unclogged, and sometimes you can't even get them unclogged. Epson tells me that they're doing something special to their print heads. They're specially coated so they don't get clogged. If that's the case, then that would also be a good choice for a low usage printer. But if you use it a few times a week, that's fine. That's plenty. It's if you leave it for many weeks that it starts to get really clogged up. So I think, you're going to bite the bullet. It's going to cost about twice as much because you're getting the ink ahead of time, but it saves you that issue of going out and getting new cartridges, running out inopportunely, that kind of thing.
And so you're suggesting the Ecotec.
Yeah, I love the Ecotecs.
Okay. There's
a pretty wide range depending on capabilities. Most of them are all-in-ones.
Okay.
I would look at probably the 4550. That's what I have at home. Isn't this funny? I don't want you to think I'm doing an ad here. even if they weren't an advertiser, this is probably what I'd say to get.
Yeah, and I have a hotspot that I use at home. I don't have internet.
Yeah.
Is that going to be a problem? Or?
No. As long as you have it, it acts like a Wi-Fi, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The printer doesn't, as long as you're on the same Wi-Fi network, it doesn't matter how you're getting the Wi-Fi network, if that makes sense.
Oh, okay.
So as long as it looks like a Wi-Fi network to the printer, the only issue would be if you wanted to print from the road, you're not there, so the printer's not online.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't think that's a big deal, right? Let me see if Epson, most of the EcoTanks are... what we call all-in-ones. They have the fax capability. If you want to save money and not do that, Epson still makes like the Artisan series, which is their photo printing series. They make some that aren't EcoTanks, but they're more for the specialty market. How much? What's your budget? I should have asked, what's your budget?
Say $200, for example.
I don't know if I'd get the least expensive EcoTank, the $2,500. I think that's roughly in your price range. That'll be
2,500.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Now, did you say EcoTec or EcoTank?
Tank. Because it's got an ink tank.
Oh, I got you.
Tank. Get it? EcoTank. You won't get the 2 years out of the. You won't get the 2 years out of the less expensive ones. They have smaller tanks, but you still get plenty. For some reason, they didn't want me to say this in the ad, but I'm going to say it to you because this is not an ad. It costs about a 20th of the cost per page of an inkjet, cartridge inkjet. It's a lot cheaper. It's actually cheaper. It's so much less expensive. It costs less than a laser printer now, which used to be the king of the hill on the least expensive, when you talk per page cost. They've kind of put the whole economics on its head. But in order to do that, they have to charge a reasonable price for the printer. So a lot of people will go in and say, well, those are expensive. Well, yeah, because you're not buying an $80 ink cartridge set every 3 months.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's up front. It's more expensive. In the long run, I think it's less expensive. The 2650 Expression is $189. That actually is a very nice printer. I'd take a look at that. That's the ET2650. $189. It's right in your price range.
Okay.
Doesn't do faxing.
No, that's all right.
Hey, Mom, I'm faxing, Mom. I'm trying to get a job at McDonald's. Stop it. My mother just...
Hey, thanks a lot, Leo.
All right, have a good one. Those were the days. It wasn't even... Was it the 70s? Yeah, I guess it was the 70s. But even into the 80s. I think it was the 80s I was using CompuServe. Don't pick up the phone. I'm in the colossal cave. I can't get out now. I'm stuck. Dr. Mom in our chat room, I don't know why. She said maybe because she's a physician. She says she still gets 10 to 15 faxes a week. So you have a separate fax line, Dr. Mom? That's crazy. Crazy. I do see places where they say, oh, no, you have to fax us this. I think in medicine, they often, right, still have to do that. Crazy. We still need wet ink signatures on all of your paperwork. What are you talking about? This is the 21st century. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today. Oh, hello. Yeah, I know I'm in Hawaii. But you see, we made a brand new show for you and even brand new advertisements in the show. Our show today brought to you, sponsored by those good folks at Carbonite, who have been sponsoring the Tech Guy show for so long, and I am so grateful to them. Their business has changed a little bit. Yeah, they are, of course, the backup leader. But now I think it's better to call them the data protection platform, the premier data protection platform for businesses. They've got customizable cloud and hybrid backup for your servers. They've got endpoint backup. They've got the solutions you need, a single vendor with all the solutions you need to keep your data safe. And in business, these days, your data is your business, honestly. No matter what you're making, widgets or heating ducts or podcasts, the data behind all that, your customer list, your accounts receivable, your suppliers, all that stuff is data. And without it, you're just going to be crazy. You're not going to have a business. You got to protect it, and you got to do it right with Carbonite, a single vendor solution with all the tools you need. For instance, I'll give you an example. Most businesses, some of our data is out there in the real world on laptops and phones. That's called endpoints. That's not good. When your data is out in the real world, it's at risk. Carbonite, that's why Carbonite has end-to-end block-level encryption, true global deduplication, so you don't waste space backing up 100 copies of the same file. Bandwidth management tools, because you're out on the net on 3G or LTE. You don't want to use more bandwidth than you need, so Carbonite helps you with that. They help you with battery life. And most importantly, should that laptop or phone go missing, they help you with remote wipe so your data never does. That's just one little example of all the things Carbonite can do. High availability backup with real-time replication and cloud failover. That means if the worst happens, a ransomware virus infects your entire home or rather business network, actually works for the home network, your entire business network, you can flip a switch and you're still running, no downtime because of real-time replication. You always have the latest data. And the cloud failover means you've got your precious business data running in the cloud, ready to go. I can go on and on, but here's the deal. You can combine all these different Carbonite technologies, support for over 200 operating systems, applications, and platforms to build a single, comprehensive, single-vendor solution that matches your needs, your workloads, your risk tolerance, your business objectives. And by having a single vendor, you simplify your environment, you eliminate gaps in your protection, you also reduce costly redundancies. You get exactly what you need, no more, no less. And best of all, one number to call if disaster strikes, and knock on wood, it's not, but you gotta, you're a good business person, you're always thinking, you gotta plan for the worst. Knock on wood, you won't need it, but if you do, there's one number to call for Carbonite's award-winning support team 7 days a week. They're there for you, even on Sundays, even today. Learn more about Carbonite's data protection platform for business. They're the best at Carbonite.com. I'm doing you a favor here. If you're in business, you need Carbonite. Find out more at Carbonite.com. Now, back to the show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. And on the line right now, Robert in Walnut, California. Hi, Robert. Thanks for hanging on.
Leo, how are you?
I am well.
Big fan.
Thank you.
Show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
and
it.
And it's a bit coincidental that today you talked about fishing. Well, I should know better,
uh-oh,
but I swallowed hook, line,
uh-oh,
and sinker.
Now, I don't want to use you as an example, but it would be helpful for people to understand what to watch out for. What happened?
Well, there was an email from someone talking about workshop presenters that I might be able to use in the nonprofit organization that I volunteer with. And there was a little attachment. I downloaded
it. Did it seem pretty specific to your particular needs? Like they almost knew what you would... Yeah. That's what we call spear phishing. That's targeted.
Yes. And,
wow,
you know, at my age, I'm not good at multitasking, so I clicked on it.
Yeah. These guys are playing upon human psychology, and they're pretty adept. They've figured out ways to get you to click without thinking.
Yeah.
And it seemed real enough that you said, oh, yeah, I could use that. Let me see. So what happened?
So nothing happened, and then I realized I should not have opened it.
That's a good symptom. You know, watch this video or open this spreadsheet and nothing happens. That's usually a sign there wasn't a video or a spreadsheet.
Well, I did open the DAT file, and there was some text. I opened it with the text reader, and there was some text in it. But then I suddenly realized I should not have done that. I closed the file. I disconnected from the internet, so I'm now now accessing email on my laptop. So my desktop, had been running slow, so I was going to do a...
Just wipe it.
Windows reinstall.
Don't do a in place this time. Do a nuke from orbit.
Okay.
Because if you install in place, it's just going to keep whatever... If, by the way, what makes you... it could have just been a DAT file that didn't have anything real in it. What makes you think it was malware?
Well... Maybe I'm being overconscious.
For instance, I sign my emails. I'll give you an example. I sign my emails with PGP or sometimes a MIME certificate. If you don't have the appropriate software on your computer, it'll just look like a kind of unreadable data file. It's actually a signature that had you had the right software on your system would say, this email is valid. It came from Leo. And it's okay. Thumbs up. Hasn't been modified. But if you don't have the right software, it's one of the reasons I have qualms sometimes about using this. If you don't sign your email, it's easy to spoof. On the other hand, for signing to make any sense at all, the recipient has to have the right software, and a lot of people don't. So I have a mixed feeling. And you'd get a .dat file from me, if that's what you got that was innocuous, then maybe you didn't get phished.
Okay.
So that's the first thing, is not to assume that you got malware. You know, you can get, it happens all the time, attachments that show up and are not malicious, but they're just not readable. Was it by any chance a winmail.dat file? Does that sound familiar?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Yes, it was.
So that is unfortunately something Microsoft finally has stopped doing. But that is harmless. I can't promise it wasn't a phishing email, but a lot of us will get emails with winmail.dat on it. And that's Microsoft. It was a very bad idea, which they've agreed to stop doing. But that was Microsoft attaching signature information in the email. So winmail.dat isn't necessarily, it's something called... The sending app used something called the Transport Neutral Encapsulation Format. In theory, it's an attached data file that might have something in it. In fact, yours did. I would not assume, unless you see some other reason to think so, that that was malware.
Okay. Because I did immediately run Norton Security. I ran malware.
Nothing saw anything yet. I think you're probably okay. Windmail.dat is a terrible idea that Microsoft had. It is a way of encapsulating attachments that doesn't work on a lot of systems. It's a, you know, and frankly, Microsoft has finally decided to stop doing it.
Okay.
But older Outlooks will continue to do it. And you don't have to pay any attention to that. It's just junk.
Actually, that was actually leading to the question. You know, I have Microsoft Office Home and Student 2010 installed.
Yep.
And I want to make sure, or I want to understand which process I should use to uninstall this version so that when I reinstall Windows and reinstall Office, I will not be at the limit of my three license pack.
Oh, that's fine. Don't even worry about it. Your three license pack will understand what's happened. And, you know, what will happen if you try to install it on a fourth machine, it'll say, well, you've already got it on other machines. Do you want to deactivate those?
Oh.
And you say, okay. So they use a license server that should handle that automatically. I don't know if there's actually an explicit way to deactivate it, but look in the menus and see. You can just do a search in the menu, in the help menu, and see if there's a deactivate command. If there is, that would be the best way to do it, because then you're sending a signal to the authentication server saying, yeah, I'm not going to use this anymore. And it'll, ding, it'll go from three down to two. And so you can, but you can install it more than three times. What'll happen is it'll say, well, wait a minute, you can't activate more than three. Do you want to deactivate the others? And you say yes. And all you have to do is log in again if you want to use it.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Yeah. And this is a good thing for people to know. Windmail.dat, sometimes it's ATT001.dat. Those both come from Outlook and Exchange servers. It's a terrible thing to do. Microsoft has decided to stop it. Meanwhile, it's still happening if you have an older version of Outlook or an older Exchange server. So I'm pretty sure that's what you got. Good idea, though, to do what you did, which is scan. There are a number of third-party online scanners you can try for multiple opinions. Malwarebytes is fine. Microsoft Defender. If you have Defender on your Windows 10 system, that's probably the best thing to do is just do a thorough scan. Microsoft also, without telling anybody, puts a malicious software removal tool on your computer. And you can activate that by hitting the Windows key, type MRT return. There's no icon for it in the start menu, but that'll launch it, and then do a thorough scan. That's one more additional check just to make sure that you don't have any malware in your system. If Defender or your antivirus, the malicious software removal tool, and Malwarebytes all agree, you know, they might find cookies and stuff like that. Unfortunately, this is a tendency for antivirus software. Just to prove they're doing something, they'll flag things that are completely innocuous. But if they don't find an actual virus on your system, I think in this case, you're okay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks for the call. Good question. Actually, we have to answer this once every few years. More of your calls right after this. Chris Marquardt coming up in just a little bit, our photo guy. We're going to have some fun. Talk about digital photography. I got to get ready for my trip to Hawaii. Next week, it'll be Rich DeMuro. Speaking of which, next week, it'll be Rich DeMuro filling in for me from KTLA. He's great. I know you love him. Don't love him too much. Just, you know, just say he's good for now. If Leo's not here, he's okay. Don't love him too much. I don't want to be Wally Pipped. meanwhile, everything we talk about on the show is available at our website, techguylabs.com. Chris, I don't use Instagram or Twitter. How am I going to post my pictures? I'll probably put them on Flickr from Hawaii. I'll probably put them on Flickr, I guess. Or Smug Mug. Yeah. Oh, I know. My website. That's where I'll put them. LeoLaporte.com. If I get any good ones. If any good sunsets or pictures of luau's or anything like that, I'll put them up there. LeoLaporte.com. Line two, Morty on the line from Hermosa Beach, California. Hi, Morty.
Hi there, Leo. Excuse me. Enjoy your show.
If you're going to be Morty, I want to be Lou. It's fine. I like it.
Okay, we'll go with Lou.
Morty and Lou on the phone here. Hey, Morty. That'd be a good podcast.
There you go. Anyway, I've got a printer problem. I've got a Brother laser, the little one, and I've had it for several years, and it's been working fine. Well, the other day, I turned it on, and I must have pressed the wrong copy number button.
Uh-oh.
It started blowing paper out.
Oh, no.
And I got a room full of paper.
Oh,
here.
No. Oh, no.
That's the problem. Two questions.
So you started it, and you walked away, and then you came back, and there was paper everywhere.
Everywhere. It still is. I'm still cleaning it up. It's been weeks.
How much paper?
I don't know.
Oh, my gosh.
But I always thought it was nice to keep it full. Well, now it's,
you went through a whole ream of paper.
Yeah, right. Anyway, first question is, how do you quickly turn it off so I could stop it? What I did was I turned the printer off.
Yeah.
And I ended up with a paper jam.
Yeah. Yeah, so what happens, I mean, you did the right thing. You can unplug it or just, you know, turn it off. But to interrupt a print job, if you don't want, I'll tell you, I'll help you with a paper jam in a second, but if you want to do it immediately, that's the right thing, and you can always unjam it. Because what's happening is you're removing power when it's in the middle, potentially in the middle of rolling something through. If you wait till it's already printing, you know, you hear it going, and pull the plug, that'll be a little bit better. But still, with a laser printer, I think you're right. I think pulling the plug, unpowering it down, maybe not the best thing. The other thing to do is go to the computer because, well, it depends on the printer, but usually the way it works when you say, I want 1,000 copies of something, is the computer's spooling it out to the printer. So check and see if you've got a print spooler still running, and you can quit that, and that'll just stop wherever the last document was. Unfortunately, there are still some printers. They're fewer than before, but there are still some printers where, maybe your brother's one of them, where the print spooler just says to the printer, here's the image, do that 1,000 times, and then goes and says bye. Oh. If that's the case, then you just have to unplug it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a crazy situation. That's like something out of I Love Lucy.
Right.
You got some explaining to do, Marty. All right. So did it get jammed?
What's that?
Did it get jammed?
Yeah, it got jammed. I pulled a couple of pieces of paper out, but there's one stuck. And in the past, it's happened, I've very gently pulled it.
Don't do that, actually, because you can strip the gears. What you want to do is there are buttons all over the thing, hidden buttons to release parts of the printer, to open up the lid, to open up the back, to open up the front. And there's a way, you know, maybe pull the paper tray out. But what you want to do is you want to be able to look into it, see where that paper is, and gently remove it. If you pull it from the print tray, sometimes that works, but it can also strip gears and it could tear off and then you've got a bigger problem. So open that thing up.
Yeah, I've done that. I've opened the doors up, and I got a couple of pieces out, but this one really stuck.
Yeah.
And
it was probably right in the middle of the feed when the power went out.
Yeah.
Although I don't know this, you know, the Brother printers necessarily, but on most, I mean, a laser printer is basically like a copier. It's the same technology. There's almost always a way to see every bit of the paper path so that you can unjam it. I mean, it would be crazy to have part of that paper path hidden. So pull the paper tray out, the supply tray out. Pull everything out you can. Oh, you know, you might need to unplug the printer, take it out, and put it on the floor and search all around it. There will be, you know, recessed buttons, release buttons, things like that. And I guess you could look at the manual.
Did they address it there? I don't know.
Oh, I'm sure they do. Yeah, how to unjam it. Oh, you bet. And online, too. Search for your, you know, Brother printer model number unjam or paper jam. You know, nowadays, there's probably a YouTube video how to do it.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah, YouTube has every. There's nothing not documented on YouTube. It's kind of amazing.
Looking it up.
I know. It's just amazing. There's nothing you can't find on YouTube.
And I can't turn it off, and I keep going on and on and on.
Yeah, I think, you know, next time, first thing to do is check the computer and check the print spooler and see if you can kill that job. Because if you can, then it may print one or two more copies, whatever the printer already received. But it should stop. And that would be the most orderly way to do it.
And the spooler shows up on the web, on the website that
on the computer that you're using to print. You printed it from a computer, right?
Yes, right. Yeah.
Yeah, so on a Mac, there'll be in the dock, there'll be an icon for the with the printer on it. On a PC, you'll probably in the system tray, there'll be an icon with a printer on it. Just or you can also launch the task manager with Control Alt Delete. Go to the task manager, and you'll see something that says something likely says something like Brother Laser Printer or Print Spooler.
And
kill that job, and that should be sufficient next time.
And what do you use old paper for? It's been coming out of the machine for a week.
Bind it up into a book and say, recycled notebooks here. Get your recycled notebooks. Save a tree. Go down to the local community college. Sell it to the kids. how many copies did it print, Morty?
Oh, I don't know. It must be... Well, I didn't want to pull the plug because the last time I pulled the plug, I had a similar problem. So I tried to look around it, and while I'm looking around, of course, the paper is filling the room.
It's straight out of I Love Lucy. You know, actually, paper isn't too bad, if paper's still pretty flat, I wouldn't reuse the crumpled up ones, but if it's still pretty flat, I just turn it over and reuse it. Because half the stuff we print is just temporary anyway.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, let's save a tree. You probably went through that whole ream. What is that, 500 sheets?
Yep, 500 sheets of
it. Oh, Morty, thank you. You gave me the laugh of the laugh of the week, I think.
Well,
hey, it's great to talk to you.
Enjoy your show, Leo.
Oh, I really enjoyed talking to you. Call back anytime.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt, photo guy, next. Kodachrome. That music, that lovely music means it's time for our digital photography guru. Chris Marquardt is here at discoverthetopfloor.com. That's where he leads his photo workshops from all over the world. And he's a great photographer, has a number of wonderful books, including the most recent, All About Wide Angle Photography, which has been my Bible for the last few months. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Leo.
Good to see you.
Leo, let's do a little look into the future again.
Oh, all right. Yeah, you do a podcast on this, don't you?
Yeah, the future of photography. And this is something that is already on there when this comes out. But let's look at computation. Well, it's not even computational photography, more like generational photography. You might remember that several weeks ago we talked about something that NVIDIA has done, which is a face generator.
Yeah.
A piece of software based on a neural network, based on machine learning, artificial intelligence.
There's a bunch of websites around this, like this person does not exist. In fact, my favorite one is now this X does not exist. And it's just a variety of things, cats, whatever, that are generated by neural networks. And they look pretty real.
It looks decent, and it's only going to get better. I mean, even if you find a few artifacts here and there that kind of give it away, this is only the beginning of something that for some photographers is probably going to be a bit scary, because you can now generate people that look like photos of people that don't really exist. But we have to keep looking at NVIDIA, because they come out with things left and right, and this is one that I am, almost a bit worried about.
NVIDIA we should explain all of this. NVIDIA's business is designing graphics processor units, GPUs. And for a long time, their business was gaming. They'd make GPUs for gaming. And then they'd made specialized processors, Quadro processors for graphic artists. They were very popular for a while among Bitcoin enthusiasts because these processors were so powerful you could use them to generate Bitcoin, but that's kind of died out. Now they're talking about self-driving vehicles and this new GAN technology, because it turns out these processors NVIDIA designs are so fast they can be used for machine learning, and they're being tuned for that. NVIDIA showed, I don't know if you're talking about this, the other day they showed a wild application that lets you just kind of sketch something kind of in the most primitive first grader way, and it would turn it into real landscapes.
This is, yeah. This is exactly what I'm talking about. So they have this new GAN, which I think stands for like a generational adversarial network, which, again, it's kind of a self-training network.
They get two AIs to fight each other until they agree on something. I'm not sure how it works, but
until one can make something that the other can't realize is fake.
Oh, so perfect.
It's they one is getting better and better, and then the other one, the one that doubts the first one, gets thrown away pretty much. So there's only a generational one that makes stuff. And the tool they came out with, I'm not sure if it's really available yet, but there are demos of it, and the code is supposed to be available soon, is they call it Gauguin, G-A-U-G-A-N, named after the French painter. And so it's G-A-U-G-A-N. You can find that on YouTube.
This is going to take all of the fun out of painting.
And what it does is...
Except for people like me who can't paint.
Right. Imagine this, as you said, very like first grader paint program that has a color palette, and you just paint very broad strokes, but it's a semantic palette, not a color palette. So instead of saying this is blue, this is green, this is yellow, you choose this is ground, this is rock, this is water, this is tree, this is sky. And you paint in really very broad strokes the picture you want to paint. And then that gets converted into a photo.
Oh, man.
Initially, I thought, oh, yeah, they have like a big reservoir of textures that they pick from. But this is something that goes beyond that, because if you put water in, you will see reflections on the water. If you change the sky, you will get that reflected in water. If you change the season, if you place the same thing in winter, you will get a different cloudscape on top to fit the weather. This is, on the one hand, very amazing. On the other hand, I think stock photographers are kind of getting scared at this point. They should, I think.
Well, honestly, anybody who does photography for a living has to be concerned about the advances that computers are making in generating images. But that's not going to stop those of us who do it for fun, for art, for satisfaction.
Well, and that's the main question. I mean, what is the role of the artist in the future? The artist with a camera. Do we still need people with cameras? Or I believe that these are our new tools.
Yes.
Or these are going to be our new tools.
I have an example for you, because this happened. I was a chess player, pretty serious chess player. And almost 20 years ago, the world champion got beat by a computer, Deep Blue, by a machine. And at first, everybody in the chess world said, that's it. It's over. We can't play anymore. Chess is no longer a game for humans. They were ready to give up. But what turned out is something a little more nuanced. Chess players starting training with computers, using computers to help them be better players. There's been a whole problem with people cheating. So they have to do a lot to keep people from somehow bringing a computer with them into tournaments or signaling to the computer. But nevertheless, it hasn't hurt human chess. The fact that we know computers can play chess better or maybe make images better than us as humans hasn't taken the fun, and this is the good news, I don't think, has taken the fun out of the game. And what ended up happening, just as you said, is the computer became a tool, an assistant to the real human.
And I believe it's still the abilities that this will give us will still not replace knowledge of how to design, how to plan, how to compose a photo. So I think that at least a part of the practicing photographers will become the people who use these, who manage these tools and who put their vision, their artistic vision into those.
We have to coexist with our new computer overlords. No, I think that's really true. I think that's, and what's, this is, we live in an unusual time, because for millennia, the world just didn't change that fast. You could go through generations, and the town would be the same, the jobs would be the same. You know, you could do what your father did and your father before him, and you know, you didn't have to think about it. But now we live in an era where every 5 minutes things change, and the people who will adapt best to it will be the people who will do best in it will be the people who can adapt and coexist with these new things. And people who like change, I like change. I bet you like change too.
Oh yes, oh yes. And I'm ready to not fight this, but embrace it and use it in the future. The
people are going to have a hard time. People don't want things to change because change is now the new normal. It really is.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I'm really ADD, and if things don't change all the time, I actually get bored.
I need distraction too.
I need things to change, or I'll be bored to tears. So I guess evolutionarily speaking, you and I, Chris, are the future. Thank goodness we got born into this era, because if we'd been born in the 14th century, we'd have been bored to tears. There'd be just nothing.
Probably true.
Nothing. I'm going to go sit out in that haystack and look at the clouds. Chris Marquardt is our photo guy. Our assignment this week is fun. Taking pictures of things from the ant's eye view. So pretty soon, in the next week or two, we'll review your images. Go take a picture, upload it to our Flickr group, the Tech Guy group on Flickr. Renee Silverman will thank you, welcome you into the group if you haven't joined yet. And Chris will take three and review them in a few weeks. So get out there, take pictures from an ant's eye view. And if you want some inspiration, go look at the Flickr group. There's already some great images there. Chris is at discoverthetopfloor.com. Got some workshops coming up soon?
Sure.
Yeah.
Always.
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 Find
always,
out what's
always.
Next at discoverthetopfloor.com. Chris, we'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us. Back to the phones we go. Line three, Mike in Culver City, California. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Leo. I am being pecked to death by pop-ups.
Death by 1,000 pop-ups. That doesn't sound good. Awful. Yeah.
But I'm using two devices, both of which you recommended. One is the Moto G6, and the other is a Google Pixel C tablet.
Okay.
And they're both running Android 8. The pop-up, which is driving me nuts, is Complete Action Using, and then up comes YouTube, Google Play, a couple of others.
Ah.
When I'm online, if I kill my Wi-Fi, then that is also killed. So I'm continually, look, I try to watch a YouTube video. The video is minimized, thrown down into the corner, and these pop-ups keep hitting and hitting until I keep tapping the screen.
Well, that's
to
interesting.
Make them go away because,
so the genesis of the pop-up is normal, is accurate, which is what the first, and it's usually with a new device, the first in Android, the first time you click a link that is a YouTube link, for instance, it will say, oh, do you want me to launch this in a browser, which would work, or launch the YouTube app and watch it there? And then below that, it'll give you those choices. It'll say just once and always. If you say always, then it will always do what you indicate. So, for instance, if I click a YouTube link in an email or on a website and it pops up, I click YouTube and click always, and then from then on, in theory, when you click a YouTube link, the YouTube app will launch and it'll play there. Is that what you're seeing, or is it something else?
That's what I'm seeing, and the choices are inappropriate to what I'm doing. I might be using a Google Doc.
Ah.
So
it is possible that you're getting something injected into your internet stream, and the Android device is seeing it and saying, "Oh, that is a PDF." Or what are the choices that are common? Are they always the same?
Most of the time, it's YouTube, Google Play, TuneIn. They're media playback.
Yeah, that's interesting. But you're not clicking a link that is media to be played back.
No, I'll be sitting there minding my own business, trying to read a Google Doc.
You're just reading something.
Or
yeah, so yeah. That's okay. That does sound like malicious behaviors going on. So there are a couple of things to look for. One of the big problems in Android in general is that the Android Play Store often contains apps that are not fully kosher. And we'll read stories. There was one this week. We'll read stories on a regular basis. Google removes 20,000 apps from the App Store that had malicious behavior. It's not a perfect App Store. So it is possible that on both the Pixel and your Android device, you've downloaded an app that is doing something inappropriate. So make sure you don't have any apps on there that are in the least bit sketch. It's always a good idea to only install apps that you really know you want from well-known companies. If there is some app you install, you know, some wallpaper app or something you install on both devices, that could be doing it. And you're doing this when you're looking at the Google Docs. Are you doing it in Chrome, you said?
It happens in Chrome. It happens in. I've tried using Brave.
Oh, I love Brave.
You said was,
yeah, Brave will block those if it can. And it's happening in Brave as well.
Yeah, and every once in a while when I swat it away, I see a little, it's like an auxiliary pop-up is like tagging along there saying Android system has stopped.
Oh, yeah, you got something on there. Okay. So it is, yeah, if it's still happening with Brave, that means probably it's not even coming through the browser. I would absolutely be paying attention to what's going on here. And if you think there's any apps that are borderline, just try uninstalling them. That would probably help. This is not normal. I use a variety of Chromebook and which is what your Pixel is, and Android devices. Are you installing Android apps on your Pixel Slate?
Well, no, it's not even the Slate. It's the Google Pixel C from...
Oh, they're both phones. I misunderstood. Okay. So there's a Moto and a Pixel's phone. Okay.
No. A Moto G6 is the phone. The Google Pixel C is the tablet.
Oh, the tablet. Yeah, that's Android too, though, isn't it? Yeah. I remember the... Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a Pixel C tablet and an Android phone. It's possible. Is there... Do you have in your mind something that you might think, oh, maybe that's the problem, some app that you installed?
No, it's me. I have tried uninstalling TuneIn and Pandora, which are some of the choices.
Yeah, no, those are fine, and those will not do that. What's happening is, here's my theory. There is a browser hijacker object or some other object installed running in the background on your phone, and it's trying to launch some media content, probably an advertisement. Most of these are not malicious so much as they want to make money off of you watching an ad. And when that link is fed to, that URL is fed to the operating system, it says, well, yeah, if you want to play this back, you need a media player. And it's offering you some media players. So that's probably an ad that's trying to play. So you need to figure out where that's coming from. I mean, worst case, of course, you could reset these devices and start over, but I think it'd be better not to do that if you could figure out what app you installed that did it. Sometimes uninstalling the app doesn't remove these. There's all sorts of sneaky ways people work. Sometimes they'll use multiple apps and bits of the malicious software come in, you know, it's separated out into different bits, and each app installs a part of it, and by the time all the apps are installed, you've got it. It's an odd thing, but something's going on in that phone. This is not typical at all.
Okay.
You shouldn't be getting this. And so there is some malware on your phone. Unfortunately, I just saw a study of antivirus programs on Android. Most of them don't do anything at all. Only a small number actually detect viruses. The Google has a malware scanning tool built into your Android device. Do you ever download stuff from app stores other than Google Play?
No.
No. Well, that's a good start. Yeah, I would look through, you know, if you can kind of think about when this started and look through any apps that you installed from that time on and maybe remove some of those, that might be a way to do it.
Can I, you said Google doesn't have a freestanding, like I can't go to a spot and have it use Google's scanner to...
No, it doesn't, but it has that built in. So if you go into your Google settings, you'll see there is a, I forgot what they call it, but there's an app scanner that scans everything you download. But it's not perfect. And obviously, it's clear that it missed something.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what it missed, but that's definitely what's going on. The fact that it's on both those devices tell me it's an app that you installed on both devices. Almost certainly. So it's something that you put on there that you thought you wanted, and maybe it wasn't the best thing to put on there.
Alrighty. I will do that kind of checking. I just want to say before I go, there are no less than 7 smart speakers in my house. And one or another twit is always playing
when I'm
working in the yard or somewhere.
Oh, bless you.
Honestly, what a network. Thank you for everything you've let loose in the universe. It's such a good.
Oh, Mike, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thank you. Keep listening.
Thanks, Leo.
All right. Take care.
I sure will.
Mike's talking about Twit. You may have thought he called me a name there briefly, but no, it's my podcast network, which I thought it'd be funny if I call it TWIT. It stands for This Week in Tech. That'd be a little joke, but invariably somebody will call me up and say, you know, that's an insult. Well, yeah, you know, we're self-deprecating. This Week in Tech is at twit.tv. This show's there, but also another dozen other shows about technology. And if you're a techno enthusiast, I'm pretty proud of what we've done. I'm glad you like it. I appreciate the kind words, Mike. We're going to take a little time out. Come back with more of your calls after the news at the top of the hour. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Stay right here. Hey, we'll be back with more of the Tech Guy Show in just a little bit, but I want to remind you our show is brought to you by DigitalOcean. I love DigitalOcean. I'm kind of a geek. Maybe you noticed. Did you notice? And one of the things I like to do is play with technologies. But not all these technologies can be run just off your PC. Sometimes you need to run them off of a server. And if you're learning web dev, which I am, things like Node.js, you need a server in the cloud to serve it. That's where DigitalOcean is so amazing. It used to be, in the old days, getting a server up and running was a week-long process, cost a lot of money. Not with DigitalOcean. In fact, the whole idea of DigitalOcean is to make it easy to deploy your apps on the simplest cloud platform. No surprises. Run production apps or dev apps, whatever you want, with DigitalOcean, because it's a scalable compute platform. You can add on storage, security, monitoring capabilities. You can have inexpensive standard CPUs. You can have CPU-optimized droplets at the, what they call them, little droplets. Every droplet's a server with a public IP address and the software you want. All on enterprise-grade SSDs, all configured and provisioned and running for you less than a minute after you think of it. That's what I love. I love that. As little as $5 a month, that's usually what I set up because that's plenty for me. But if you want a production, you can scale it all the way up. You can capture backups and snapshots. So if you screw things up, which I frequently do, it's easy to get back to where you were. There's a great, easy-to-use control panel. There's a full API, which is nice. There's Kubernetes now. If you want to use container, of course, they have Docker, too. Containers are incredible. I'm playing with Docker a lot. It's nice to have a Docker in the cloud because then I can use it on all my machines, right? Over 2,000 open-source tutorials available for developers. That's one of the great things. If you say, and I just did this the other day, I want to run Haskell. There's a tutorial, Haskell on DigitalOcean. It makes it as easy. You know, it's almost a cookbook recipe. And the marketplace is amazing. You can discover and deploy pre-configured one-click applications for everything you'd need. LampStack, sure. Docker, no problem. GitLab, absolutely. It's really nice to have your own Git, your own secure, nobody else can get to it, Git. Jenkins. Use Jenkins for builds? No problem. Set that up. Plesk, cPanel, WordPress. I can go on and on and on. Try and stop me. Ruby on Rails, Python, Node.js. Find an application that suits your case, spin it up on a droplet, a minute or less, and you're up and running. I love that. I used to try to do this. I have a home server, and I used to try to do it at home, and I'd always screw it up, and I have other, you know, stuff I'm running on there, like my Minecraft server that I don't want. So now I just do it on DigitalOcean because it's as easy as it is to create a droplet, it's just as easy to get rid of it. So you don't waste any money. The droplets you don't use anymore, you just destroy them. And they're gone. Bye-bye. No problem. No muss, no fuss. I spin up and destroy droplets every month. No problem. And what do you get at no additional cost? You get 4 nines uptime, and that's an SLA. They guarantee it. Monitoring and alerts, team accounts, cloud firewalls, full data managements. They have 12 global data centers. That's good for redundancy. It's also good for you because you can have a data center near you or near your customers, right? And 24/7 world-class support every day of the year. I love DigitalOcean. This is a transformational technology. DigitalOcean is trusted now by over 1 million developers. It's easy, it's affordable, it's powerful. Go to do.co/twit today to find out more. And if you sign up today, do.co/twit, they'll give you a $100 credit free. do.co/twit. We thank them for supporting the Tech Guy podcast, and you show your support for the podcast by using that URL, and hey, you get $100 credit, so why not? do.co/twit. DigitalOcean, designed for developers, built for businesses. And Leo, I should really just say built for Leo, because this is like so cool. Back to the show we go. Let us get to a call, because I've got somebody on the line being very patient and waiting. And that is Stephen in San Antonio. Hi, Stephen.
How you doing, Leo?
I am great. Thank you for hanging on.
Thank you for letting me talk to you. Before I get to my question, I flew to Alaska. I cooked for the Iditarod mushers, and I just got back.
Awesome.
I flew to Alaska on a Supermax, no problem. I liked the soup, and then I flew back on a regular, because by the time I came back, they had grounded all their Supermaxes, but I prefer the Supermaxes, and I'm not afraid to fly on them.
Good. It's a good plane. I don't have enough expertise to know whether they should have grounded them or not, but I can see why you would want to err on the side of caution.
Yes, exactly.
One more plane goes down, you're going to look pretty bad.
Well, as long as I'm not on it, I'll be okay.
Yeah, okay. By the way, the Iditarod, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
What do you cook for all those mushers?
Mostly met a guy up there named Mitty, and he used to be a musher, and he is famous for sourdough pancakes. So mostly I have to carry on his tradition. I have insomnia, so I can stay up all night, and that's usually when most of them come in, is in the middle of the night.
Oh, and they need calories badly. They've been running through the snow for days, right?
Well, sourdough pancakes and eggs are usually what they have. Now, the village people usually bring other dishes, but mostly sourdough pancakes and eggs. I have another friend that has Peace on Earth pizza, and everybody orders a pizza for these mushers, but they never eat them. They all go to the people that are just hanging around volunteering for the mushers.
So the mushers know. They know something. There's something. They feed the pizza to the dogs. I don't know what they don't want the pizza. They want the pancakes and eggs.
Yes.
They know something.
They say I'm a good cook, but I tell them anything that you don't have to pour hot water into is going to be good to you.
Hey, let me ask you, where do you get your sourdough starter?
The villagers make it. I don't know where they get it. I've heard it's like 50 years old or something like that.
Yeah. A good starter, that's golden.
Yeah.
That's gold. If I were you, I'd take a little bit of it and take it home with me.
Yeah, if I can get it through TSA, I have to put it on my check.
It's sourdough starter, honest. I know it looks like plastic explosive, but trust me. So I heard that the Iditarod might have been in jeopardy because of the lack of snow. It was okay?
No, it was fine.
Oh, good.
That mushers actually weren't complaining that much.
Oh, good.
I've been going for 7 years now, and so they all think I live there, and I wear shorts. I don't care how cold it is.
That's why they think you live there, buddy.
Exactly.
He's wearing shorts. He must be a native. So what can I do for you?
Well, I just wanted your opinion on, Kim, I guess I stumped her, but you're on, I forgot what they were. We got...
The bone conduction headsets? You mean the... You know what? I have to say, when I first... And by the way, we should mention that... I don't know if they still are a sponsor, but they have been a sponsor in some of our podcasts. When I first... Do you remember... Are you old enough to remember in the 70s a thing called the bone phone?
Yes.
They had ads in Rolling Stone, all the magazines. It was a pair of headphones you'd hang around your neck. It looked like, I don't know, a severed Gumby arm or something that would just hang around your neck. And that, you know, they said, oh, it sounds great because it conducts bone conductance. And all I ever heard was, it didn't sound good. So I had a preconceived bias against this idea. And then the Aftershocks folks sent me these Trex Airs. I don't know if there's other companies making these, but this is the ones I use. And they sit over your ear. The inducer, the thing that makes the music's on your temple. On the bone right next to your ear, you could feel it, the kind of protruding bone. It's actually, I guess, a little below your temple. It's your cheekbone. And they even send, in the kit, they send earplugs to prove that you're not getting the sound through your ear. So you put in the earplugs, it actually sounds better when you put in the earplugs. I wouldn't say it's perfect fidelity. So if you had a really good pair of real headphones, you know, like a $1,000 version, you're going to hear more separation. It's going to have an airier sound. The instruments are going to sound better. But it sounds easily sounds as good as iPod headphones or iPhone headphones, the earbuds. And it has the advantage it's not occluding your ear. So if there's, like, let's say you're in the kitchen at the Iditarod and somebody and you want to listen to music, but you also want to hear if somebody's telling you something, it works perfectly. It's great for sports because you want to be able to hear it if there's a car coming up behind you as you're bicycling or running, or if you're driving and there's an emergency vehicle. And you can hear all that because your ears are not blocked. But you still hear music. I think the music sounds great. I mostly listen to it, audiobooks with it, voice, podcasts, radio shows. Sounds great on that. It's Bluetooth, good battery life. It's also a speaker. It has a microphone, so it's also a Bluetooth headset for your phone. And when I'm going to be on a long phone call, this is always what I choose because they're comfortable. And so, yeah, I'm glad you asked. And again, I should mention they are a sponsor or have been a sponsor. But honestly, when they first approached us, they said, no, you got to send me these. Because if this is like the bone phone, I am not doing an ad for it. And I was really pleasantly surprised. They do sound very good. So they're not cheap, but they're the only solution I know of that lets you listen to music and still hear conversations and stuff like that. So I think that's a really good.
They offered me a pair of sunglasses with the head things embedded into the sunglasses.
Yeah, that should work, but I haven't tried those.
Yeah, $89 as opposed to $200.
Okay.
I guess, like, somehow got on there.
Were those from Aftershocks or another company?
Yeah, no, it was Aftershocks.
Well, then I'm sure they're fine. I have not tried those. I've only used the Trex, T-R-E-K-Z. Yeah. It's probably the same technology.
Well, yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
So, well, thanks.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked because I was very skeptical, and I really like them. I wear them all the time. I keep them. What I do is I keep them next to my computer in my office, and I keep them plugged in. They use a micro USB charger. They could get about 6 or 7 hours of nonstop use on them, and I want them always charged because whenever I have to make a long phone call or want to do chores around the house, it's great to have it right there.
Maybe 6 or 7 hours.
Yeah, I think so. I've never worn them down. They seem to have pretty good battery life. I think they claim 6 to 7. I don't know what they claim on it, but I have never worn them out. Yeah, it says 6 hour battery. I don't know if the sunglasses are different. Yeah.
Also, I wanted to tell you that in 1 year, I lost 70 pounds, and then the first month, I lost 25 of that 70.
Nice.
Drinking ginger juice tea.
Ginger juice tea and not eating, I'm guessing, sourdough pancakes.
You can't. No.
No. Not recommended unless you're mushing 100 dogs across the Alaskan tundra.
Yeah, I don't need that many carbs.
Then you've earned it. Hey, great to talk to you. Thanks for calling. Take care, Steve. And Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Tony on the line from Riverside. Hi, Tony.
Hi, how are you today, Leo?
I am very well. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Just dealing with this Vegas traffic on the 15th.
Oh, you going to Vegas or coming back?
I'm coming down the hill. I'm not going there. I'm just stuck in the traffic of everybody going back and forth.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's too bad. I'm sorry you're stuck in that. Everybody seems to all come at this. We're like lemmings, aren't we? We all do the same things at the same time.
I know.
They should make the weekend should be all week long. Then we wouldn't have this problem.
Oh, yeah, I'd do that all the time if somebody paid my bills for me.
There is that.
That would be great.
What can I do for you, Tony?
Well, a lot of stuff you guys talk about is a little bit over my head, but I've been listening to you for a long time.
Thank you.
And it's interesting. But I'm having a problem with when I go camping. I have my normal phone or my cell phone with YouTube TV.
Yep.
Okay. And I would like to broadcast that on my television in my RV.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't have Wi-Fi.
Right.
So is there a way that I can broadcast my YouTube TV to my TV from my phone without Wi-Fi?
So in theory, you're using a Chromecast, I presume, on the TV, right?
Yeah.
In theory, the way a Chromecast works is you and the phone, or the Chromecast and the phone, are on the same Wi-Fi network, and once you have connected your phone to that device, it actually, if you press the Chromecast button, will look for all the devices on that network. It'll see the Chromecasts, whichever ones you choose that one. And then that makes a connection. And then you're sending a command to that Chromecast device to use the Wi-Fi and start streaming your YouTube TV. You could even turn your phone off at that point because the Chromecast is doing all the work. But that requires being on the same Wi-Fi network. And since the only internet you have in the phone is from the phone, I've never tried this. I wonder, it doesn't seem like this would work, but if you turned on your phone as a hotspot.
That's what I do.
And then, but then, and then you try to Chromecast, but it won't work, or will it?
Because it still is asking for a Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
I was thinking, can I get a Wi-Fi box that's not connected to the internet?
Yeah.
Would that let my phone talk to the TV if we're on the same Wi-Fi?
Well,
box?
It would need to be connected. Let's see, it wouldn't need to be connected to the internet. You don't need internet. You need internet for the Chromecast, though. So you would need internet. What you can get, and a lot of people do this, I've done this, is I used to call them MiFis, but really they're just little Wi-Fi routers that get internet access through the, you know, the cell network. What kind of phone did you say is it?
I have an Ali.
And who's your carrier?
T-Mobile.
Okay. So
T-Mobile now, starting today or tomorrow, I have supposedly unlimited Wi-Fi,
right.
Or unlimited hotspot.
One way I know this will work is if you get a device from T-Mobile that is your wife becomes this Wi-Fi access point, getting its data from T-Mobile. Then your phone can join that. You no longer have to use bandwidth on your phone because you're going to get the Wi-Fi from the MiFi device, and your Chromecast can be on it, and then your Chromecast would work.
Okay. And do I have to pay monthly for that?
Well, that's up to T-Mobile. For instance, a Google Fi, you wouldn't. It would be the same price. They just give you they send you a data SIM. T-Mobile may or may not, I don't know, ask them. Say, I want a MiFi. I don't know what T-Mobile calls them, but they'll know what that is, I think, in most cases, if you say, I want a MiFi.
Okay.
I'm trying to think. It seems like there should be a way to do this, but I think the issue is the phone says, no, I'm the internet connection. I can't be using it and be it at the same time. So,
right?
I'm the source of the internet here. So,
exactly. What I do now is I have you know, my YouTube TV, and I can watch it on the phone all day long.
Yeah, no, I love it.
And I don't have an issue.
Yeah.
And then I can use my phone as a hotspot on my Surface Pro.
Right.
To do my work, but it just won't work with the TV.
Right. If you had a smart TV, you could use your phone as a hotspot. Have the smart TV join the hotspot, and then have the smart TV stream Netflix. The issue is that the Chromecast doesn't quite work that way.
Oh, okay.
You see what I'm saying?
I do have a smart TV as well.
Oh, well, then that's it.
I have the Chromecast before I bought this TV,
yeah.
So I can do it through that way?
Yeah. So if you have a smart TV, what you do is you turn on your hotspot on your phone, have the smart TV join that Wi-Fi. You'll have to control the TV through the TV, not your phone anymore, right? You're going to use your remote on your TV, choose Netflix, and start streaming there. Or do you have YouTube TV on the television?
Well, I have YouTube, but not YouTube TV.
Yeah, see, that's
I try to do this at home to download YouTube TV to my TV.
Yeah,
through my hotspot, but I don't think it'll work because all it does is says it's downloading. And
yeah,
never-
your smart TV would have to support YouTube TV. And in other words, it would have to have the YouTube TV app. I would bet that that's coming. Who makes your smart TV?
I have Sony.
So check in the store. You know, they have a smart TV store. See if they have a YouTube TV app yet. I wouldn't be
I know that they have an Android one that I'm seeing.
Yeah, though they have Android, but you need it for the smart TV, right? So if you if you downloaded the YouTube TV app, then this would all work.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's I'm trying to think of other ways you could do it given the two things you have. And I think that's pretty much it. You're going to have to watch YouTube TV on your phone until your TV supports it.
Okay, or try and find that MyFi at.
Yeah, let me just. I'm just looking at the T-Mobile site to see what they call it. I'm sure. Hotspots. Maybe that's just the, just what they call it. It's cellular. Yeah, I don't know. If you call them, they'll have. Just tell them what you want to do. And I think they'll understand the term MyFi. Unless it's some young kid who hasn't been around very long, he might not.
Sure.
Now there
I'm
may even be
the office,
there's one other way that Dr. Mom is telling me you could do this, and that's actually a good idea. Depending on the phone. A lot of phones you can connect a HDMI cable to. So you'll take the USB out on the phone. If it's a Type-C, you get a Type-C adapter and connect that. And you'll have to get the adapter for that phone. I'm not familiar with your phone, so I'm not sure if that'll...
Yeah, it's a really good phone. But the thing, when we do it that way, the battery life runs out of the phone and I'm not able to charge it while we're doing it like that.
Yeah.
So that's the only drawback when it comes to that. I'll have to have the phone completely 100% charged to be able
You can't charge it and use it that way. That's right.
Okay,
one more thing. Tali in our chat room says, here's a solution I always get asked this a lot, and I have never tried this. This is an interesting idea. He says you can use a Wi-Fi extender to do this. So you're going to get a Wi-Fi extender, plug it in, turn on your phone's hotspot function and have the Wi-Fi extender extend that Wi-Fi. And then the.
That's a way around it, isn't it?
Maybe. I don't think that would work, but he says it does, so it's worth a try.
Okay. I'll give it a shot.
Give it a shot. Hey, thanks for the call.
Thanks, Leo. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a good one. Leo Laporte. That's a crazy answer. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm really still thinking about our call last segment. It doesn't seem like a Wi-Fi extender would work. Because the issue is, from the point of view of the phone, you have to be on a Wi-Fi network that the phone is not on. If the phone is making the Wi-Fi network, even with a Wi-Fi extender, I don't know if that's going to work. Tali, does it really work? Seems a long shot, and I'd hate for you to go out and get a Wi-Fi extender and then find it doesn't work. I do like the idea of using a cable. You're right, your phone would have to be able to give you juice the whole time. That's the thing. Nice thing about a Chromecast, you don't have to. On we go with the calls. Let's see. I think we got Steve from L.A. We lost you earlier. Steve, are you there?
Yes.
Yay!
I'm glad I got back to you.
Yes, thank you. I apologize. What can I do for you?
I am in the process of purchasing a gaming desktop computer for my business.
And, wait a minute. What business are you in that you get to game?
Well, the software that I use, I'm a dentist, and we design implants,
Marketplace
implants, and I believe the software works better in a computer than a gaming computer.
Right. So you're really not getting a gaming computer, but you want a computer with enough graphics oomph to do the designing program. Is it a specialized dental designing program, or is it a kind of traditional 3D design program? What's the program?
It is called the Blue Sky Bio.
Okay, so it is a specialized program specifically for designing dental implant systems. I'm seeing it, Blue Sky Bio.
Yes.
So I'm going to look at their software. It's software only, right? You can put it on any computer?
I guess so, yes.
Yeah. Well, this is very cool. And really what it is 3D, CAD software. Unfortunately, yes. I'm looking at their site and I don't see what they should be saying is, well, here's minimum hardware. All right. That's what I want is what is the hardware they say? Windows 10 64-bit or Mac OS 10? Hi, Sierra. Ooh, they do want a lot of hardware. A quad-core i7, that's pretty fast. 16 gigs of RAM, and you need a dedicated GPU. This is what you were talking about with a gaming machine. That's very typical. Although, they don't say a particularly high-end one. They say it'll work on a GTX 650 or a Radeon HD 7750. These are not, by any means, the state-of-the-art. So you could probably save money by, you don't need to get a super high-end gaming system. And by the way, you could always get a PC that just had these specs. Honestly, sometimes when you go to get a gaming system, you go to a company that specializes in gaming systems like Alienware. Alienware is owned by Dell. It's the same Dell computer. They just put some fancy LEDs on it. Right? And are your clients going to see this? Are your patients going to see this computer? Because that's another issue. You don't want them to think you're designing their implants on a gaming system. And if you look at the Alienware systems, they look like gaming systems. So I'd feel pretty comfortable getting a high-end PC like a Dell, but just making sure that you get enough RAM. Here's what I would say. I'm looking at the specs on the Blue site, but what I would say you probably should be looking for Dell would be my recommendation. Although you know HP and a number of other companies make perfectly good computers, you want a desktop, I presume, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So Dell makes workstations that would be more than powerful enough. For this, they'd also, range in price depending on your needs. I'd say probably, for our editors, we use Dell workstations. You probably don't need an XPS. You could probably get an Optiplex. But let me look here at an XPS.
I have looked into Costco is offering one. Which is called iBuyPower.
Yeah, that's their house brand. I'm not sure I'd recommend that. Costco has a very good return policy, of course. There's nothing wrong with it. As it says on the Blue Bio site, I would get at least an i7. They have 6-core i7s now. Speed is the essence for you too, especially if you're designing these and building them in. Do you have a 3D printer and you're printing them out?
No, I do not. I print them and then
you outsource that.
To the laboratory, you outsource.
Yeah, you outsource it to a lab. So it's not like time is of the essence. You don't have to get this out in the same day. So, those iBuyPowers are fine and Best Buy stands by them, which is nice. Costco stands by them, which is nice. So they're definitely, going to be there for you. I don't think you need a gaming machine. I think what you have to look for is a high-end quad or better yet 6-core i7. They say 16 gigs of RAM. That tells me you want 32.
Correct.
A little bit better. And any high-end system these days with a GPU will be offering a GTX 1070 or better, which is more than enough power.
The one that I have looked for. Can I give you the item number if you can look at it?
Yeah, or just give me the specs. If you have the specs, I can. I mean, I'm looking right now at the iBuyPower gaming system, which is I would look at the Primal, which is pretty good. That's got a 9700K, which is a very nice processor. It's got a 2060, which is kind of a high-end video card. I doubt that. The real advantage of the 2060 is it now does ray tracing. I doubt that the software, the Blue Bio software, would be that sophisticated. But if it is, it certainly would make a difference. Looking at their specs, I don't think they need anything that fancy.
The one that I've found, it's a gaming desktop, which is 9th generation Intel Core i7,
yep.
9700K, and then a 2 terabyte of hard drive, 240 gigabyte of SSD, and 16 gigabyte of memory. Obviously, I need 32.
I would upgrade that, yep. The SSD is nice because that's going to make it a lot faster. What's the GPU in that, the graphics processor?
It says the GeForce RTX 2070 graphics.
That's very high-end. More than adequate.
And it's called liquid-cooled with customizable.
Yeah, that's. I mean, if you can afford it, and I bet you can, that's a profitable business. That's a very nice system, and at night you can play, games on it. That is a very high-end system. That's nice, yeah. I'd put some more RAM in it, but otherwise that's a very nice system. Do you have to back up your patient's designs?
Yes, we do. Yeah, we work with the company which they give us the software to
patient management, which
okay.
is automatically every day it's backed
So up. They do off-site backup. Okay, good.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, so the size of the storage isn't critical for you. That sounds like more than enough, 2 terabytes.
But as far as the computer itself, I buy Power. Are you familiar with it?
Yeah, they're okay. They're a house brand. I'd rather you went with Dell, to be honest.
Okay, got it.
Look at a comparable system from Dell.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with iBuyPower, but Dell's going to be, I think, a better choice long term for you.
Okay, Leo, do you have time for one more question?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. I have a printer, an HP OfficeJet printer, which is connected to my PC with a USB
right.
USB connection.
Right.
And every now and then I lose connection, and I have to reset it so it connects. Anything that comes to mind, you think?
Yeah, I mean, I would maybe try a different cable just to make sure that the cable isn't getting a little flaky. It could be, unfortunately, Windows, sometimes device drivers get unloaded, and you need to use that. You need a device driver, USB device driver for that printer, and it could be flaky. You might look and see if you can get an updated device driver. Those get regularly updated. You go to HP.com, you can get an updated device driver.
Okay.
I don't, and it could be something with the printer that's a little flaky too. Usually we hear those problems on network printers. USB printers usually are more reliable. Hey, thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and on the line from Georgia. Hi, Ann.
Hey, good afternoon, sir. I got a question. It's about sending emails. For several years, I've had an email address. Now, my husband helped me set it up.
Okay.
And then just so you understand what's going on, he sat beside me and walked me through. I used from my email address. He told me to send him an email so he could show me how easy it is.
Yeah.
And he watched me.
Yeah.
I did everything right. My email to him did not come through. So he said, get up, let's switch chairs. And then from my email address, he sent himself an email, and it went through. So then he said, let's switch back. Same thing.
I do this to my wife all the time. It drives her nuts.
Okay. And 3 of our adult kids have tried it with me, too. And for some reason, my emails do not go through.
When he's sending, okay, so it works with him, but is he using everything the same as you are, your email client, your, and all of that?
Yeah, okay, for example.
Is he a magician? Is he trying to trick you? No.
No, and also with 3 of our adult kids. For example, just for example, say my email address is my dog has fleas.
Yes.
Okay. My husband and our 3 adult kids, they used my email address just to show me how easy it is.
Yeah.
With me, it never works. With them, it works. And, you know, the big computer that sits on your computer desk that you cannot lug around?
Yeah.
If I sit down and all I do is touch the keyboard, the screen turns blue with letters and numbers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It goes, and it doesn't, everybody's computers I try to use.
You have, it's a very common syndrome. We call it COS, Computer Malapparatus Syndrome. It means you're not allowed to use computers. You can't use them. There's something, it's like static electricity in your fingers that whenever you touch a computer, it just malfunctions.
Okay, I was told by somebody on my side of the family to try using rubber gloves. And I
said, No. We're all teasing you. No, it's not rubber gloves. Do you have a lot of static? Where in Georgia are you?
Jackson County.
It's not dry there, right? It's pretty humid. So you don't like touch your dog's nose and it goes zo?
No.
No. You don't get static shocks a lot, do you? Do you slide your feet along the carpet and then you touch a doorknob? No.
No.
Cuz that is bad for computers.
Even when I was at work, the computers would do the same thing.
What?
And everybody, even this is a joke, but my family, if I walk in their door and if I, you know, even go anywhere near their computer, not wanting to use, just pass by. They've got guard dogs there.
Whatever you do, Ann, do not touch my computer. So you will sit down at a computer, you will put your hands on the keys, and it will blue screen immediately.
Yes, sir. And then go black. Even my, let me look at what it's called. The iPad.
It does that? What happens then?
Even these will act up.
Even the iPad. Yes. What? How will it act up?
The screen. If I'm reading, for example, I like to read. When I'm reading.
Yeah.
And I go to touch, you know, so the page will turn.
Yeah.
It just shuts off. And my husband.
It just shuts off. Like goes black.
Yeah. And my husband, he likes to bring his. I call them black boxes. Anyway, he'll bring it because he wants me to see what preaching was that morning. And I can't see because I'm legally blind. So I go to hold it, and I've not touched no buttons. I just hold it, and his goes off.
You break his, too?
Yeah.
What the heck?
I don't break it, but it just goes bonkers. I cannot, since 2005, when they set up my emails never go through. But when my husband sits down and uses my email address, it goes through. Our kids, it goes through. Me, forget it. My all computerized things giggle at me. And, you know, I just want to laugh. So is it physically possible, the way the Lord creates some people, that there's some kind of interference?
Well, you might be the first I've ever heard of. I know a lot of people feel like this, like, well, man, I'm just not good at computers. Every time I try to use them, it just doesn't work and it breaks. But you're the first person I've ever heard of who could touch a computer and it will immediately crash. That's a unique and powerful skill. But I honestly, in order to really diagnose this, we're going to have to send a scientific team with instruments over to observe this. Because,
well, at work, I had to the vitals of the residents and patients, and they real quick were telling me just write it down.
They won't let you touch a computer at work.
No.
Does it happen every single time?
Yes.
Consider, if you will, a young woman from Georgia.
Is it the way the Lord made some of us?
Lord made you. Well, you're the first I've ever heard of. I've heard of people who had trouble with computers, but I never heard anybody who could. I'll tell you what, the military would love to meet you. We'd send you to North Korea and give you a tour of the nuclear bases and say, we'd like you to meet Anne. She is our secret weapon.
That's one thing that people learn real quick about me. I have never had high blood pressure. But I called other people.
I'm not surprised. If you come in and you touch all my computers and they all blue screen, my blood pressure would go through the roof too. Wow, Wendy.
About people wanting me to bow down and do what they demand.
Do you have any medical devices or appliances in your body, a pacemaker, a steel hip, anything like that?
No, sir.
Okay, well, I just want to say one thing. Never come to our studio.
You're safe.
I've never heard of such a thing. I don't know how to fix it because I just don't know what's going on. You can get bracelets, grounding bracelets. The problem is they only work when they're attached to a cold water pipe or a ground in your building. But it might be something to try. Any electronics store or computer store, the technicians wear them when they work on computers. It's a little electrically conductive bracelet that has a small wire with an alligator clip on the end. They clip it to something that will draw charges off. And if you have a lot of it's for static. If you somehow, you know, have an electrical field around you, that might help to take it off and send it down that cold water pipe. Maybe you could then use a computer. Can I also say, do you fly airplanes? Because I wouldn't go up in the plane with you. Okay, good.
No. Yeah. My husband, we were in a electronics store.
Yeah.
And he was nice. The man was nice. He was trying to show me. And
he just broke everything.
He handed it to me.
This is a useful power if you could just harness it. I don't know how we can use this, but all I can say is I am thrilled you called, Anne. I'm sorry about your troubles. I have no fix for you at all, but I would suggest a call to your nearest Army base, because I bet you they could find a use for this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Anne. Wow. 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 She sounded completely sincere. I just don't know what it could be. Oh, let me interrupt just a brief moment. More of the Tech Guy show coming up, but I have to tell you a little bit about my favorite place to hang my hat on the web, my blog site, WordPress.com. 12 years. I got my 12-year chip with WordPress. I've been using WordPress since the last decade. And I love it. LeoLaporte.com, that's my blog. That's my home on the web. I believe, I'm very, I think, adamant in this. Everybody has to have a website. Everybody. Past the age of 13. It's really important, believe it or not. It's important for teenagers, high schoolers, because, well, think about it. If you Google somebody's name, what do you want to find? You want to find their best stuff. As a teenager, this is really important. Don't let them be Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat. They need to start building their reputation on the web and also building their skills on the web. And WordPress.com is a great place to do that. They can start for free, but there's room to grow. Hundreds of templates, so it makes it very easy. Really, WordPress.com is what MySpace was to my kids' generation. I almost said my generation, but we had rocks. That's all we had. My kids' generation. WordPress is a place for them to learn web technologies, learn how to set up sites, and put their best foot forward. If you're a business, same thing. Of course you need a Facebook page and a Twitter account, but that's not all. You need one place to link back to that's yours, that you own. You put all your content up there, text, photos, videos, music, whatever. It's hosted by WordPress.com. No one can take it away from you. Nobody can close your account. And you can upload, but you can also download. So you're never trapped there either. This is the way it's supposed to be. And boy, do they have a great customer support team. Not just some group of people with binders that are reading the answers to the questions. No, they're WordPress experts. They picked them. Often they're WordPress community members, enthusiasts. They say, you do a great job helping people. You want to work on a support team? And they're there 7 days a week, so you can always get support 24 hours a day. The WordPress platform is so good. Many professional publishing companies like Fortune.com, like Quartz. You know, Quartz got awards like crazy when they came out. People say, this is the most amazing. What a beautiful layout. It's WordPress. That's their secret weapon, isn't it? That's why 33% of the entire internet runs on WordPress. Does that sound like a mistake? It's not. One-third of the entire internet is using WordPress. That is as successful as you can be. That's amazing. And it's because it's really great. Go to WordPress.com/tech guy. We're going to get you 15% off your new site. Get your teenagers to go to WordPress.com. They can register their domain there, set up a site, start putting their best foot forward, establishing their presence on the net. It's really important. WordPress.com/tech guy. You'll get 15% off. We thank them so much for supporting the Tech Guy show, and I thank you personally, Matt Mullenweg, the WordPress team, and WordPress.com for more than a decade of great service and a great product. If you want to show the Tech Guy your appreciation, go to WordPress.com/Tech Guy. Get 15% off your new website right now. WordPress.com/Tech Guy. We thank them so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Now back to the show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Nothing against, we were talking with Steve earlier, the dentist. He wanted to get a gaming system. He's designing 3D molds for implants. This is very common, of course, in dental offices. And he said, based on the specs from the company that makes the software, I want to get a gaming system. You pay more for that word gaming. And you also get design that looks, something the gamers would want, lighting and stuff. I'd go to Dell and get a business computer and just make sure that the specs are adequate. I think you'd be happier in the long run. Line one, Dave Prosser, Washington. Hello, Dave. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, thanks so much for calling. What can I do for you?
So I was going to ask you, I'd like to beam my internet connection to an outbuilding that's a couple hundred feet from my house on our property.
Okay.
So I have a two-part question. One, I was wondering, what's the difference between an access point and point-to-point, like if you
right.
use Ubiquiti software right. or hardware? And then secondly, I was wondering, if you went with point-to-point, how do you distribute the signal in the building once it gets there, either wired or wireless?
Right. So the issue is that a typical access point, Wi-Fi in general, is rated for about 150 feet.
Okay.
So that's why to get to an outbuilding that's 300 feet away, you'd be much more reliable than just putting an access point in the window and hoping it makes it. And, of course, with distance, the longer the distance, the slower the speed. So these Ubiquiti devices and others are directional. They're basically a shotgun that you're aiming at that outbuilding, and that gives you a better result.
Okay.
So there are some really good sites for Wi-Fi antennas and all of that so that you can figure out what your needs are and see what your choices are. I recommend Radio Labs at radiolabs.com because they will talk about point-to-point versus directional versus omnidirectional. Omnidirectional is what a typical Wi-Fi access point is. You're spraying the energy in all directions. If you spray it in one direction, you can get it to the outbuilding much more efficiently.
Okay.
Almost all these systems solve the problem at the other end. There's a receiver, but then that goes to a standard access point, and that's what you'd use inside the outbuilding.
Okay.
Because there's no point in getting it there if you can't distribute it, right?
Right. So when you harvest it from the point,
it'll have a standard access point,
like a hub.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. It'll be basically another access point.
Okay.
So, but this site is fantastic for explaining what the issues are, what your needs are, what the terms are, and then giving you a variety of choices in terms of antennas and base stations and all of that stuff. And it is fairly complicated.
That's what I was going to say. Is it better to have the pro guy put it in spite of
it? I don't know. It depends on how handy you are and how technological you are, yeah. how savvy you are.
Yep. I like learning. I just like letting the pro guy do it so it's buttoned up good when it's all finished.
You can't go. I mean, look, do I put the Wi-Fi in our studios? No. I have Russell comes in. He's our he's the best contract IT guy I've ever worked with, and he comes in and we use Ruckus systems and all sorts of weird enterprise grade systems because we have various interesting and unusual Wi-Fi needs. And it's not that I couldn't do it, but it would be a lot of hair loss.
Yep.
And I just it's not worth it. So yeah, just it's kind of up to you.
Yep. No, I agree. It's kind of like auto repair. I can do it, but I have the pro guy do it.
Nowadays, you really can't do auto repair. You have to go because they've got it all set up to hook up to these computers.
Yep.
If you don't have the right computer system, the days of the shade tree mechanic, sad to say, are long gone. I used to tune up my old Volkswagen.
Yep.
But you can't do that anymore. You have to.
And I find, too, often it's how much of your life do you have to give away?
Well, that's right. So you think like I do, and you get to a certain point. You know, when you're 21, you do it all.
Yep.
You get to a certain point in life where sometimes it's better to have the expert. He'll come in. Yep. If you get the right guy, he'll come in. He'll set it up. It'll work the first time, and you'll be done. And maybe you'll pay a 50% premium on the gear to pay for his time. But you
move on.
then you go on to the next thing. Exactly.
Yep.
But if it wouldn't hurt to go read up at Radio Labs, that'll give you a better idea of what we're talking about. Okay. And you may look at that and go, oh, yeah, I'm getting a guy.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I'm getting a guy. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Leo. You have a good day.
My pleasure. You too. Yeah, that's something's totally solvable. It's just not that the standard access points just don't go that far. So, but there's all sorts of new technologies. Beamforming, for instance, is a technology that we're seeing. It started in 802.11ac. The next generation of Wi-Fi will have it even more. And it's not always turned on, but the ability to aim to target a device, that's going to give you much better range than just some, you know, spraying it out everywhere. So there's a big improvements being made. But there's a lot of questions. I mean, somebody who knows what he's doing will probably come out with a signal strength meter. We'll actually kind of do an assay of the property and what the issues might be, and we'll design something very specific that will solve those problems, those specific problems. And that's probably a better way to do it. Patty, Corona, California. Hi, Patty. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. I listen to you on the radio, and I watch you on Twit every Saturday now, and I consider you an education.
Thank you. I'm waving at you right now on the TV. She watches on the internet, folks. No TV station worth its with its marbles would broadcast this. But
right. I'm watching you, and you know what? My TV is buffering. So
oh no! I hate it when that happens.
I do too, but I cut the cable cord, and I'm very happy with apps and the Fire Stick and all that.
Oh, it's amazing what we can do now, frankly. I mean, we really, the
internet. I don't know why we waited so long.
Well, and we had a ways to go. The internet really wasn't ready for it. I was watching an old bit from some years ago that we did with the internet cameras, and man, they were terrible. You know, one frame a second, and we made people use a phone because the audio was so terrible, things like that. We've come a long way.
So amazing.
What can I do to help you?
Okay. I don't remember if it was last week or the week before, but you talked about an app called iMazing.
Okay.
And that's for transferring, like, for instance, music from your Mac to your iPhone. Well, I looked it all up, and I read all about it, and I went, oh, this is cool.
Right.
I put it on my Mac.
Okay.
And I attempted to follow the instructions as defined in the internet, and I blew my music.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Oh, no. So normally with a Mac and an iPhone, you use iTunes. You'd connect to iTunes, it'd sync it up, and you'd have a copy in your hard drive from iTunes, and you'd have a copy on your phone. iMazing is for people who don't want to use iTunes or for whatever reason, you know, they want to copy music onto a different system. And so you accidentally deleted the music on your phone and you don't have a copy anywhere else?
Well, here's what I did. I'd had this music from my very first iPhone, which was a 3G.
And you wisely said, I should back this up.
Yeah, I did. And then my kids got me the XR. For and my son took the card out, and he wiped everything but my contacts and whatever else he thought that I should hold on to, and my music was gone.
Oh, your son. So let me tell you, for future reference, that's not how you set up a new iPhone.
Well, this was the one where they mailed it to you, and you had to call them and follow the instructions on the screen. Isn't that crazy?
I don't know what that is. No, so it's very straightforward. The way Apple sets it up is you take the old phone, you back it up with iTunes, you connect the new phone. It says, oh, do you want to restore from your old phone? And you say yes, and it blasts it all on there, and everything's there. So your son did something non-standard.
I guess. I left it all in his. I'm a senior citizen. I feel grateful that I know how to use an iPhone and a Mac at my age.
Oh, it's awesome, though, right? I mean, my mom's 86, and she loves her iPhone and iPad. And she's smart enough. She's smart enough not to let me touch it.
Oh. Oh, my gosh.
So
the thing is now, this last weekend I spent 4 hours one day, 4 hours. I loaded all my music discs, which I had. And I loaded them onto my Mac, and my son synced them and transferred them a week ago, and now I've loaded the rest, and I'm afraid I'm going to blow my music out.
Oh, so okay, good. You got it. So here's the first thing. Make a backup copy. So when you load it in with iTunes, and it's taking the CDs and it's putting it in iTunes, right? It's ripping the CDs. Yeah.
Yes.
So it stores it all in the iTunes folder, in a media folder. That's everything.
It's in the library, right?
Well, there's a couple of folders. So this is, and I'm going to have to look because iTunes has changed this. So you have a music folder. In the music folder, you have an iTunes folder. There is, in the iTunes folder, there's a media folder. And everything in the media folder you want. In particular, you want the music folder, but there's other stuff in there you might want, downloads, and looks like I have automatically copied from iTunes. But basically, you want not the library file, because that's just an index. You want the iTunes media folder.
media folder.
See if you can find that. Now, you may have an older Mac with older iTunes that doesn't have that same folder structure. They changed it. So look in your music folder. Do you see an iTunes folder in your music folder?
When I open iTunes, I see library.
Oh, no. This isn't an iTunes. This is exit out of iTunes because you can't see it from iTunes. You have to use the Finder. Do you know what the Finder is on your Mac?
Yes, I know. Yeah. Yes, I got it. Okay.
So go to your Finder. Music. Yes.
Okay.
You see the music folder in your Finder? It'll be in your account. So you'll have a folder called Patty or something like that. And inside that folder, there'll be a bunch of stuff, applications, desktop, documents, and music.
Music. Okay.
You see that?
No.
Okay.
I'm looking in Finder, and let's see, this Mac, okay.
Yeah, click this Mac.
Oh, there it is. I see it.
Okay. You see the music folder? And inside the music folder, do you see an iTunes folder? You're on a Mac, right? Yeah.
I'm on a MacBook Air.
Yeah, yeah. There should be a music folder, and inside the music folder, what do you see?
I don't see the music folder.
Oh, you don't see it. Know. Okay, so you see a little house icon with your name next to it? That's your home directory.
Okay. Oh, wait, look.
So inside my Mac, open that up. There'll be a home folder. It'll have a little home icon. It's your name on it. It's whatever your login is that you use to get into your computer. Okay. You see that?
No, I must be.
Okay, open, double-click my Mac. What do you see? What else do you see?
I have something that says this Mac.
Yeah, inside that, what do you see?
I see all sorts of music.
Hmm.
Let me see here.
You see your files there? You shouldn't see them there. They should be put away in a music folder.
Okay.
Did you copy them to the desktop? How did you get them out of... All right, we're going to try another system. Try hitting, when you got the Finder window open, Command, Shift, hold those two down, H. Command, Shift, H. Mm-hmm. That's the home folder.
Oh, yeah. There it is. There's music.
Yeah. Now tap on that music.
Yeah.
What's inside that?
iTunes.
Oh, that's the folder. So that folder, you want to copy somewhere else.
I have a hard drive.
Perfect. Plug in your USB hard drive.
Yeah.
Once you see it on the desktop, just drag that iTunes folder over to it.
Oh, cool.
That'll make an exact copy of that folder.
All right.
Then put it away.
Okay.
It may take a while since you copied all your music out.
Yeah, it's going to.
So copy that out and then go have a cup of coffee and a piece of pie. And while you're doing that, it'll copy. And now you can proceed without fear because if, you know, something bad happens, you just copy it back off of that hard drive.
Okay, because all my music is on my Mac now.
Don't want to lose it. Yeah, you don't want to have to go through that again.
I want to transfer what I didn't transfer last week.
Yeah.
To my phone. Okay.
So from now on, it's easy because you put it in iTunes. You can see it all in iTunes, right? You see all your music. Okay. When you connect up your phone, you know, use the lightning cable, connect it to the computer, and iTunes launches. You can then say, I want to synchronize all my music onto my phone.
You know what happened, though, is iTunes didn't launch last time. This iMazing launched.
Oh, I hate you, iMazing. Yeah, because it's replacing iTunes. No, you just close it and open iTunes. Okay. Just you'll have to do it by hand.
Okay. All right.
See, once you open iTunes, then iTunes will see your phone. And the first thing it should do is back up your phone, which is a good thing.
Okay.
And then you'll see, unfortunately, iTunes user interface is horrific, But if you dig around a little bit, you should be able to find the settings for your phone. And what you'll say is synchronize, and then click the music setting and say synchronize all my music from iTunes onto my phone. I want it all there. And it'll just copy it all over.
Okay.
Now, I'm sorry about iMazing, because I think it's more for people who are more sophisticated, who have special needs. Okay. They don't want to manage the iPhone with iTunes. You should manage the iPhone with iTunes.
Yeah, okay.
Because you don't need iMazing. That's for instance, the reason I recommended it to that person is their iPhone was connected to iTunes on a different computer. They wanted to access that music on another computer.
Oh.
And you're only allowed to use iTunes, one iTunes with your phone. Otherwise, it'll erase your phone and then do it, and you don't want that. So iMazing is for people with multiple computers, multiple copies of iTunes, and so that's not for you.
Can I also sync that my iTunes on my Mac with I have a Shuffle, an iPod Shuffle?
Yeah. Once it's in iTunes, you can sync it to 100 different devices.
Okay, super.
The other thing is if you do have music in other places, import it into iTunes. So iTunes has an add music menu item. If there is music on your desktop or somewhere else, add that all to iTunes. You want iTunes to manage it all, nobody else.
Yeah, no, it's all in iTunes.
Oh, good.
I don't have it anywhere else.
Perfect.
But I wiped it off my Shuffle when I used iTunes.
Yeah, but the beauty is you have it all now, and you can copy it back onto the Shuffle in just one click.
Right, that's the thing about being my age, is I saved every CD I ever bought.
Smart woman. You obviously haven't moved too much.
Actually, I did, but music.
That's
music
important.
And DVDs, that's important, yes.
Yep. It's a lot of schlepping.
Thank you so much.
Oh, anytime, Patty. Thank you for listening.
Okay.
All right.
Oh,
I'm waving. If I'm still buffering. Just,
you're buffering.
You just know I'll be waving when I unbuffer.
All right.
Thanks, Patty.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks to our musical director, Big Pee-wee, and to our fabulous phone angel, Kim Schaffer. Thanks to you for joining me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, next week. Hey, I'm really happy Rich Demura from KTLA will be filling in for me as I head to Hawaii. Have a great geek week or two, and I'll see you in a couple. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.